Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style, coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia. This is PPTS, presented as a service to the progressive community by the Coffee Party USA Radio Network. PPTS highlights the activities, activists, and activism of the progressive movement. Join our host and special guests as we discuss the most interesting and important topics of the day. If you have a cause, an issue, a campaign, or candidacy that you're actively engaged with, please feel free to give us a call at 646-929-2495 and share with us your question or comment. Join the show's co-host and producer, Progressive Patty, in our lively chat. Go to the bottom of this episode page, sign into the chat room, and let us know what you are doing about it. All opinions are welcome. For the Coffee Party USA and Progressive Politics Tennessee Style, welcome to today's show. Please make welcome our host and friend, the Tennessee Progressive.
River. I am and will be for the next 2 hours, the Tennessee Progressive. Welcome to our show today. It's been an interesting week, of course, in the political and realm of the citizen. And we want to see if we can get caught up on things and move ahead to the topic of today's show, which is an investigation that we're doing in 8 parts. Each part has 3 shows, so it's going to be a 24-week adventure that may take about 40 weeks to do at the rate we're going. The title of the series is called The War on the Poor, and we have identified 8 separate distinct battlefields that war is being fought on that we're going to discuss. There are others that we will touch on from time to time, kind of tangentially to these 8 major areas that we're looking at. But last week we began a 3-week survey of the battle for education in America. That's our second battlefield that we're looking at in the war on the poor. The first one was, of course, the war on hunger. And I encourage you to listen to those previous shows if you want to be up to speed on everything that's going on. On behalf of Coffee Party USA, Blog Talk Radio, Netroots Radio, and Progressive Politics Tennessee Style, welcome. Please feel free to give us a call and let us know what you think is going on with the battle on education. 646-929-2495, and let us know if you want to offer a comment or a question, and we'll put you on air and have a conversation with you. We love hearing from our listeners. You can also join us in our live chat room, which you can find at the bottom of today's episode page. Sign in and join the conversation. You can join Progressive Patty in the chat room. She's our show producer and co-host. And if you have a desire to be on the air, give us a call and she'll make sure that you get on the air today with me. We take a moment to pause and reflect and be grateful for the life and example of Nelson Mandela, who passed away this week, age 95. His life is a testimony to living out what you believe in and to the strength of the truth in the question, what can one man do? What can one person do to change, to be the change they seek? We note with pride that because of President Mandela's work and his life, South Africa is a much freer nation these days. It didn't solve all its problems, and it did not always exist in peace, nor did Mandela with the United States of America. There are some things that people generally don't choose to talk about when they talk about Nelson Mandela and his work and his life, but he's a man who spent 27 years in prison because of what he believed in. And I think that any time you can find somebody that is that willing to do that much because you believe something is that right, I think it's perfectly okay for us to consider that man to have lived the tenets of his, who walked his talk and who continued even through his presidency and beyond his presidency to realize their reality, to become the change they seek. So our very best to the people of South Africa and to his family and friends and to us all who have benefited from his work. Education is our topic today. If you are an educator, a member of a teacher's union, student, parent of a student, politician who claims education is one of their working spaces, then I hope you'll give us a call at 646-929-2495. We'll be here for the next 2 hours in peace talking about the battle for education in the war on the poor. To bring us up to date a little bit, one should begin with a simple question. Is there a battle for education going on in the United States today? I believe that the clear answer is yes, and I believe that most people with reasonable intelligence would say the same. Why is there a battle? What is the battle over? Who's engaged in the battle? What do they want? And what can you do about it? Are things that over the next two sessions of our time together here at Coffee Party Radio, we'll be talking about. There are many, many sides to this battle, but we're going to concentrate primarily on two, not so that we can completely cover the topic because there's just not enough time in a lifetime for that, but rather because if we concentrate on these two sides of the issue, we will probably come into contact with most of the sides of this issue. Education in America has a very rich and illustrious history. From even before the founding of our nation, education was one of the signal purposes and intentions and activities of colonists and new Americans to come up here from other places and talk to us about why education matters. It's really important to realize that there is an intrinsic value to education inside and outside the country. Inside the country, it is because it forms the basis of our future. Whatever that future is defined to be, education is equipping the citizens of our land of today for the work and life and definition of America tomorrow. Because of that, we have always held from our individual families who taught their children at home to the religious schools, to the state schools, and then public education, which has been ongoing for several hundred years now. We have valued education and prized it as one of the shining achievements of our democracy. We are federally constituted democratic republic, and there has never been the instance where any territory that became a state at some point did not have an intrinsic value that was worthy of even statehood. It's important to know that education affects every person in this country, whether you have children . Whether you pay property taxes that purchase education in the community where you live, the elementary schools, the high schools, the junior high schools, the colleges and post-secondary and higher education programs that provide the professionals that serve your community. Education touches every life every day, not only yours, but those of the lives of the people around you. It's terribly important that we understand that we use education and the education that we receive every day of our lives. If you think about it, in your own life, whether you feel that the education you received is sufficient to what you're doing in your life's work right now as an adult, whether you would like to have more education to supplement your work or to increase your living quality by simply learning a new thing, whether you're a child who goes to school every day, whether you're a teacher or an administrator, professional, education that touches your life every single day. And the simple goal here is to understand the significance and central role that education plays in our democracy, because we believe that an educated citizenry is the basic fuel that runs democracy itself. And if you want to look at it from the terms of a republic, each of the several states have individual education systems as well as federal education systems to which their citizens participate at some level or another. And we need to understand that it is so critically important, this education notion to our land, that in a lot of ways, one of the signal factors in determining the health of America is by looking at the health of the education system in America. From the local school district to the state district and to the national citizenry. I think that we've gotten to the point of understanding that we are going to have a discussion that talks about education and what education generally means, an organized system of instruction and learning that provides certain skills, traits, abilities, characteristics, and outcomes for the recipient of that education. So why are we in disagreement about it? Well, there are a number of different players in education that one can see inside the classroom, which is where we generally consider education in the pure sense to take place. So if we look just at that part of it, we come up with a lot of possibilities that perhaps we didn't have before. And the behavior that our citizens have during the education process, either directly or indirectly, or the way our government has, either directly or indirectly, admittedly affects every citizen of our land. And what we have to do is we have to understand that education, of course, is not free. Although there are certainly educational resources and opportunities that we as citizens can take that are in fact free. I personally have been engaged in an experiment for over 2 years now to see what exactly is available in terms of free education for children and adults. And I've got a pretty good overview of what that is. All right. So if you want to call us and talk about education and the role that you think it should play in daily life or the role that it plays in your life or has played, give us a call at area code 646-929-2495, and we will put you on the air. You can also join us in our live chat room at the bottom of today's episode show, where I believe you're probably listening right now to this, if you can hear my voice right now live. All right. We have multiple access points to education. Now, for the purposes of this conversation today, we're going to talk about public education. Which involves independent school districts, those things that we generally refer to as public education, a public school. A tax-paid school, and private education, which is, I hate to do this, in the first place, it's not public education, okay? It's where you generally pay a fee called tuition to attend or have your child attend a private education institution for their learning process. public education generally is free. There are fees that you pay to participate. If you wish to go into a different school district in the area where you live, you may have to pay a fee for your child to participate in that other educational environment. If you have school A and school B within a mile of your school, you will be zoned or placed into one of those schools. Okay? So let's establish a base case. Let's say that you're the parent of Johnny. Johnny is 12 years old, and he is in the 6th grade. And Johnny lives in a city called Anytown, USA. His address is 123 Easy Street. Okay, so that's Johnny. Johnny's 12 years old. He's in the 6th grade in Anytown, USA. He lives on 123 Easy Street. During the course of our conversation today for this hour and 40 minutes, we're going to move Easy Street around a little bit so that we can get a perspective on what education means to Johnny and whether it changes depending on where Easy Street is in his town. But for the purposes of our discussion, we have two public schools within 1 mile of Easy Street, okay, that cater to Johnny, that are middle schools or elementary schools, depending on where you live. Okay, one is Anytown Middle School. And the other one is called Heroes Middle School. When Johnny and his parents, he has two parents, a mom and a dad, moved to Anytown, they discovered that Johnny had been zoned into district that supported Anytown Middle School. And that would be, you know, when school came back into session after the summer during which they moved, that would be the school that he would nominally go to. Being new in town, they weren't exactly sure which was which, so they did some work. And we'll talk about that. There's also a private education possibility at a private Catholic school, which also is in the district where Johnny lives. Okay, it's called All Saints School. All Saints School is a K-12 school that goes from kindergarten through the 12th grade. That also makes itself available to Johnny if he meets the originating conditions. So in Anytown, USA on 123 Easy Street, in the Easy Street neighborhood, you have three schools to which Johnny could attend. One of the important things about moving and being a parent is that if your kids are school age, you have to get them into school. They were lucky enough to move during the summer. His dad got transferred from his job as a software engineer to one of the company's sites that happens to be in Anytown. Okay. His mom also works. She's a church secretary at Anytown Prez. So we see that Johnny has some alternatives to the school that he can attend. The thing we have to remember here is that the first goal is for Johnny to receive the best education possible. The best education possible, and you need to maybe write that down on a sheet of paper, like I'm doing. Because these are the facts that are going to fuel our conversation for today when we're talking about Johnny. We've made several assumptions that are going to be tested during today's show and next Sunday's show concerning Johnny and his education that may or may not follow to carry on, okay? Now, because we know Johnny's parents are reasonable, intelligent people, they're both members of the Coffee Party USA organization where they know they can get information on quality education. And this is one of the places that they're going to go to determine, you know, they're going to gather the facts that are necessary to determine which of the schools will be best for Johnny. And we'll come up with some different scenarios. So I want you to have a clear picture of Johnny in your head because he's the target of our talk today. Okay, Johnny. Little Johnny. Public education is provided by the state with monies from the federal government who pay them to state a sum of money for every student that goes to their school for every day that student attends that school. And one of the simple ways of doing that, it's not universal, but it's good enough for any town USA, is that the federal government finds out how many students are in how many schools and how many grades in the Anytown Independent School District. They then find out how many students are in how many grades at all the other schools, the private schools. They look to see if there are any schools that are homeschools. They look to see if there are any schools that are for-profit charter schools. And within the Anytown District, they receive numbers from the state. And based upon the numbers that the state provides them, a budget is developed as to how much money the federal government is going to pay to the school district, including all sources, to assist in the provision of public education that the state will then provide to the student. It goes into a state education fund, which is generally then put into the state education budget, which is where a goodly portion of the state education budget comes from, but not all of it. So you have this flow down from the federal government to the state government to the Anytown School District to the schools, some amount based upon how many students are in that school or in that district, or in that state. And then, once you figure that out, you have an anticipated budget of what it will cost to provide education to how many students and how many seats and how many schools in that district, and then you divide the money up so that you can provide the things that are necessary to provide Johnny with an acceptable education as defined by both the state and federal governments. The general issue is that among all students, there are certain things which should be taught to every student. Okay? Those things which are considered to be necessary or core components of education receive the bulk of the federal money that goes into that school district or into that school. if it is a public school. We're talking about public schools right now. And that feeds the reading, writing, arithmetic, the core subjects of school, generally are paid for or receive the largest percentage of the federal funds that come from the federal government treasury to the state, to the school district, to the school. But it's not all of it. The state must provide educational funds for each seat in the school district in the state as well. Additionally, any town pays a percentage of the total school budget through the assessment of property taxes. And when Johnny's parents purchase the house, they pay a property tax. And every year they pay a certain amount of the total property tax that they're assessed to the school district to provide the schools and all that that means. Now, Johnny has the choice of going to Anytown Middle School or Heroes Middle School. Both of those are public education institutions, part of the independent school district. He just happens to live on a boundary line. He lives within one of the boundaries, and he lives across another boundary. If he meets the certain requirements of this district, he can also attend All Saints Catholic School, which is in the system of schools that is K through 12. K-12 is offered at Anytown Middle School and or the Anytown School District, split up among several schools, from the elementary school to the middle school or the junior high school to the high school to the vocational school to the nursing school. And Anytown may even be lucky enough to have either a community college, or it may even have a state college. It may have a private college. And we have now a structured elementary, middle school, junior high school, secondary school, which is high school, post-secondary school, which is college, generally either a community college is a two-year program or a specialty program, or a private college or a state college, which are at least four-year educations. And we learned that the state college even has graduate programs. So they offer associate degrees, bachelor's degrees, and master's degrees. You could, at this point, go into some demographic data, which would be important to our discussion regarding the number of citizens that are employed, the average median income, the average median home price, racial demographics, how many of the people of any town are Caucasian or Black or Hispanic or Chinese or Pacific American or American Indian or any number of demographic possibilities. You could look at what the income strata is based upon I make no money to I make an insanely godly rich amount of money and divide that out and see how many of the citizens or what percentage of the citizens are there. You could also look at slices of political data to find out how many citizens of any town are registered to vote, how many are voted for the D party or the P party or the R party or the I party or the L party or the G party or the, you know, choice, to get really a heartbeat without going there, an understanding of Anytown USA. And the reason I say this to you is that every one of these things that I've just talked about matters when it comes to the question of the battle for education. And this is really the grounding current, all right? If you want to talk about education in America, that's a big pie. What I want to do is I want to put it down to an understandable local level, because these are the things that really affect every citizen of every zip code in America, okay? How we deal with these things varies even within districts, even within schools, where you may do one thing at any time middle school. They may have a different education model and that paradigm at Heroes Middle School, okay? The difference is the money. The teacher corps, the administrative corps, the superintendent and Department of Public Education's core values, their mission statement, their vision statement. Have they decided to split up the town's middle school so that one goes to a general education outcome and has a better chance of success in a high school that teaches general and business education preparation, and Heroes is going to go to a college prep program, but it also has a vocational school system? Maybe they both have a vocational school system. The complexities of the makeup of each middle school really doesn't matter so much, but there are differences between two middle schools in the same school district. One of the general understandings about public education in America is that the education is eventually paid for by the consumer of it. Therefore, you have differences based upon who it is that is consuming the education that is given to it or paid for by it. If you have somebody in a school system that is, say, considered to be middle class, that means nothing more than, based upon all those data that we talked about before, put it into a recipe mix and it comes out with a cake that we call middle class. Okay? If you put a different cake together, you have upper class or affluence. If you put the cake together a different way, you have a working class or the unemployed, the underemployed, and the poor, as well as blue-collar work. A lot of states, a lot of places like any town, segregate their data in such a way as you can actually split each of those out into a different recipe. And from the federal to the state to the district to the school, all the money that flows into each of these schools as a total, and we also include the parents in this, because where the All Saints schools depend entirely upon the parents for the money to provide this private education. Public schools depend on parents and have for a long time, in ever more increasing important ways, which is part of the larger issue we must discuss. Okay? So we have Johnny. He's 12 years old. He's a sixth grader at Indiantown, USA. He lives at 123 Easy Street. And depending on where Johnny lives, who Johnny's parents are, what job they have, if any, if they're a double parent, if they're a sole parent, if they're a ward, if he's a ward of the state that is being under guardianship by someone that's related to him or not, someone within his world is tasked with the responsibility by law to ensure that Johnny receives a certain amount of years of education. It is a basic law that we established a very, very long time ago in this land. A very long time ago. Both at the federal level and at the state level, which is where the core influences of government apply to everybody. So this is universally true. For the purposes of our example that we'll do for the next two shows. Now, if you want to talk about uniquenesses to that, that's fine. But today I want to talk about the generalities. I want you to understand that when we say education, there are certain things we mean and there are certain things we do not mean. Because the next thing we have to do is we have to look at Johnny inside the classroom. So I want you to know that there is a classroom in a school, in a town, that is part of a unified school district or an independent school district within a location, a regional locality, and within a state that is a federalized member of the United States of America. So we have to get from Johnny's seat to the federal government, okay? Every year, the Department of Education does a feasibility study, really. They start with zero, and they go to some certain point, greater than zero. I'm not going to get into statistics and mathematical equations for you, but I want you to understand. Okay? Now, there are two ways of looking at this number, but the Department of Education comes to a number of participation in the education system which the federal government is willing to participate based upon the number. The number, of course, is the number of dollars that come out of the Treasury that are allocated to the Department of Education that are in large part determined by legislation which affects the operation and administration of the Department of Education. But this is also the money controlled by the Department of Education, which goes to the several schools, the several states and their schools. That's preschool, kindergarten, education, as well as elementary, secondary, and post-secondary education within that state that are public institutions. There are different flavors of education within the public education system, and there are different flavors within the private or the non-public education system. In many, I would say most, localities that have a zip code in the United States, there are at least two options, a public option and a private option for education. But there are also multiple funding diagrams or strategies that go into providing that education. All of these, whether they be public or private, magnet or charter or homeschool, they all have certain educational outcome requirements. At the end of the grade six, a student should reasonably be expected to perform at the following level of education. Okay, now these are generally referred to as educational norms, educational outcomes, or educational standards, so that we get into a little bit of the nomenclature that you hear a lot about. The likelihood is that if you're listening to my voice, you have at least some experience, if not all of your experience, within the confines of a public education system, just due to numbers. Because the vast majority of students who are educated in America and have been since the late 1700s have done so within a public education system to at least some point. So I want you to understand that within the public education system, there's a huge number of people that flow. Every teacher you had, every student you went to school with, was at some point or other involved in a public education system between pre-K and post-op. Okay? There is a very small percentage, generally thought to be about 0.38%, who has not ever gone to a public school. They've either gone to private school or a charter school or a magnet school, or they were homeschooled, or no school. And there are plenty of those, too. Now, so we already start with two discrete entities. We have the public and the private. Okay? I want to try and get through both. I don't know that I will. If not, we'll continue this next week. But I want to talk to a caller who is calling us from area code 707 today. Thank you, caller. Welcome to the show. Who may I say is calling?
This is Linda from Northern California.
Hello, Linda.
I just had called in. I didn't know how when your time of show started, so, and I don't know what the the topic is, but I think you must be almost over, aren't you?
No, we begin at 2. Or you're in California? We begin at noon Pacific and go until 2 p.m. Pacific.
Oh, okay, cool. All right.
But topic today is the war on the poor, and today's focus is a battlefield called the Battle for Education.
Oh, God, yes. Okay. Yeah, I work with, a party here in California. I'm on the Central Committee and everything, and we are always, a lot of the people on our committee are teachers. And they're just, we had to fight back the propositions last election with they're trying to gut unions, public education and everything like that. So,
in favor of what? What do they want to change it to?
This area is real all hot and for charter schools.
I see. California has, in the last 5 years, been a testing area for the two major charter school companies, and they've certainly gotten into school districts in many of those areas. I know L.A. has a large number of charter schools. They kind of go up through the Inland Empire into the northern part of the state, not nearly as much as they are in L.A., but L.A. seems to be breeding a lot of it. So,
well, I'm in the top of the state up by the Oregon line, but on the coast.
Okay, the pretty part.
We have Redwoods, I'm in National Forest. And this is where the Ewoks, the Star Wars, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
The Return of the Jedi, I think it was called.
That
was filmed right down the street here. So, yeah, it's real pretty, but it's not, we don't have a lot of tax base. They depend on, tourism, and basically, the state's in trouble, and they were closing parks down, and all that kind of thing. So it really hits this area because we've got four or five state or national parks right in our county.
Okay.
And that's just and I live kind of out in the sticks, so the town isn't that big, but that's where it's always a budget issue about busing kids from where I live into the town versus, having a little charter school out here. They're just worming their way in, you know.
So well, they will very definitely take advantage of everything they think can be to their advantage in your school system. I presume, do you have any idea of numbers, statistics, or where you live, how many people live in your town or your county?
Oh, my town is really tiny. We might have 400 people.
Okay.
But Crescent City, I don't know. I don't really know how much it is. It's not huge. I guess you could look it up. But it,
what county are you in?
Delnorte County.
Delnorte, okay.
So when I went to the convention last spring, you know how like everybody stands around and says, "Oh, where are you from? Look out, what's the need?" And they look at me and I say Delnorte County and they go, "Oh," and then they turn around to somebody else.
Yeah, because they can only say to you, "I'm sorry," and that's pretty much where that conversation ends, right?
Right. I mean, it's either they don't know where it is or we're not very important. So, you know, and I'm the Tea Party has really gotten a foothold here. And, you know, so I don't even get the paper anymore. It's not even worth it.
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of discouraging. So I try to do things on a more national level if I can, because I just don't know that we're going to do much.
And you tell me about your city council or your school board?
Well, the school board, we got some people on the school board, and they, meaning the Tea Party people, have just realized that, they've got control of the school board, so now they're going after a lot of our candidates that we're supporting. And the city council, I don't know what I can say because some of them are on our committee. Without getting in trouble.
Well, we don't want you to get in trouble.
No.
Feel relatively certain they're all listening too.
Yeah. It's just that it's such a small town, and it's my impression because I'm not from here originally. I'm from South Jersey. And, you know, then I was in the service, and then I went to Florida, and then I went to New Hampshire for 19 years. So I've been elsewhere more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Do you have children in the school district?
No, my son's 32, and he's in South Dakota.
Okay.
And
so,
he's working out there.
So but your life is tangential to, but not directly affected by the school district itself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, now. In New Hampshire it was because, my son is in the autism spectrum. You know, he's got Asperger's and seizure disorder. He has a bunch of things. And it was back in the 80s when nobody had heard of any of this stuff.
Right.
So we had to go to Boston hospitals and try and get him properly diagnosed so that we knew what we're dealing with. And you were always studying the school system and the HMOs and everything. So, yeah, it was the school system, I guess I've gotten better feelings about it since, you know, then because I had a lot of problems with in the hand.
Right.
And if I had a young one here in this district, I think I would have problems. But as far as the people that I've met that are at least ones that, you know, hang around us, they're pretty much good people and they're dedicated.
Okay.
And,
what is the major source of income in Delmore?
In the area?
Yeah.
There's a lot of retirees because it is so pretty. They buy property. They live elsewhere, but when they retire, they buy property. And there's also Pelican Bay Prison.
Uh-huh.
And we have a lot of prisons.
I did happen to know that.
Oh, you knew that. Okay. Well, I got mixed feelings about Pelican Bay, but it was the decision to build it was way before I moved here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's helped the area. more jobs if they had improved the harbor. But they have this kind of attitude, like, we want their money, but we don't want them, tourists.
Right, come back and see us now, y'all here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Jersey Shore is filled up and everything. That's where I grew up. But
right.
I can understand they don't want to turn into that. But it can be done. I mean, Brookings Harbor in Oregon, just over the line, is managed very well. And, in Danden and places like that, they have, like, quaint little restaurants and things that bring in business. And I think mm-hmm. they could have really brought in some tax base.
Okay. Well, they may yet.
Well, yeah.
You've got retirees, you've got land and real estate, you've got Pelican Bay prison system. Is that still operated by the state of California, or has it been privatized?
I believe it's still by California because they're doing all those hunger strikes and all that kind of thing, and then there's sympathy hunger strikes by other prisons for the Pelican Bay ones because it's like they're in the shoe, which
mm-hmm.
is like the real
segregated.
Segregated. I mean, these are real bad people. I got the impression they were trying to force the state hand, but I guess I need to look that up for sure. I don't think it's privatized.
What is their issue?
They're saying that from what I can gather, they're just saying that conditions aren't what they like. I mean, I don't.
Being the inmates, the convicts.
The inmates. I haven't really been following that too terribly close, but basically, it sounds like, from what I heard from some people that I live next to that work there,
uh-huh.
that they don't like the shoe, they don't like being segregated, they want more access to things, and I don't know where it's an iffy situation. I'm sure things aren't perfect there.
Okay.
I don't know the ins and outs. There's a lot of political intrigue going on.
If I may be so bold as to ask, and none of your business is always a good answer here, do you own the place where you live?
No, I'm a low-income renter.
Okay.
My house went in a divorce back in...
Do you have any idea how much... the average person pays in property taxes in your area?
No, I guess that would be something on the book. Did I get maybe the Chamber's website? I don't know.
Probably would be in the county property assessor's office data.
Oh, okay.
Because they...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's where public education is generally funded from in California. By the payment of the assessment fees, the taxes on your home or land?
That's the same way it was in New Hampshire. And I know they were really high in New Hampshire and everybody was complaining. But New Hampshire New Hampshire doesn't have a state tax or a sales tax. So,
right.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of good, but is a trade-off.
Right.
Excuse me.
Does New Hampshire have an income tax?
No. That's what live free or die. There's no tax.
Yeah.
They do, for people coming up on skiing or room and meals, those kind of things. But they really subsist on things like property tax. And
right.
I imagine there must be things that, we have a lot of industry like Lockheed and things like that. So I imagine there must be something those companies are saying, but I don't know how they do it.
Are you talking about Lockheed and Del Norte?
No. Oh, God.
Oh, that was in New Hampshire. Okay. Yeah.
This area has no industry. The problem is we have so much land that's dedicated to national and state forests.
Mm-hmm.
The few people that have property here, it's not much of a tax base. So they're complaining because they're paying so much. And a lot of times they're retired. You get the mentality, well, my kids are retired. Why should I have to pay for your kids?
Right. That's really common. That's common. That's by no means limited to where you live. There are an awful lot of people who believe that. Well, how is the education system where you live?
From what I could gather, it's not so great from talking to young people who just got out. And then there was, and the teachers, they're doing the best they can. But I got the impression that because there was, when the schools don't come up enough and they lose funding.
Deficit?
Some of the schools had trouble with that and they had to bring up their scores and things like that.
You're talking about standardized testing. State testing?
Yeah, I believe.
Agency board.
Yeah, I believe that. See it because I can't remember the name of the charter. It was a charter school too. A couple of the charter schools that were going to lose their charter, I guess.
No.
They had to hurry around, scurry around to get their scores up.
Can you tell me? What time frame you're talking about here? Is this something that's ongoing or something that happened recently?
No, I think it was probably a year ago or something like that. Maybe a couple of years. And I believe that they got their scores up enough to be okay. My problem with the school systems and what they do, and it's not just here. I've seen it in New Hampshire, and I've heard it done in other states. But when you have, because of my own personal problems with my son,
right.
I saw how he was shuffled off. Teachers wanted to feel, like they're really getting through to the kids. But if you have some kids that need specialized education and things like that, They one-on-one, a little more one-on-one is basically all you needed. You didn't need to be shoved off to the recess.
Okay.
Because what they were pushing them off into these rooms, and in Nashua, they put the kids who had special needs, like Christopher, put them into this class. I forget what it was called. It wasn't the resource room, some other room. But he was put in there with troublemakers. Kids that were they had issues in who knows what if they had, problems at home or whatever, but like there'd be fire starters or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be put in those because he gets bullied and everything a lot.
Yeah.
And so they put him in with the bullies. And they wanted to keep the test scores higher in the quote-unquote regular class.
Yes.
And, that's one issue that I think they probably do everywhere because of the standardized test.
And to get to the good news first, how's Christopher doing?
Well, he moved out to by Mount Rushmore in Nevada City, and he was there, and he wanted to go for a job. I told him to go to Voc Rehab, and they actually worked with him, got him some interview clothes, and did little mock-ups of interviews to get him into the process. And the first place he applied for, he got a job. So
yay, Christopher.
And he's gotten some commendations because this is a job where he's it's like people call in and they have problems with their internet or with their computer. And they take in, they have like contracts with all these major providers.
It's a call
and
center.
So, yeah, it's like a call center. And then he got some special certification so he can work on people's computers. I forget what it's called.
Excellent.
Gold something.
That's
but anyway, he got a common day. He was real proud. He got to meet Steve Wozniak. And of course, we're Mac people, so, you know, he was.
Well,
he
we
was
won't
so
hold
happy.
That against you.
I take it he's not. Okay. But you know, he has come down in the world to the PC for gaming stuff.
So. Oh, he does know how to get around a real computer then.
Yeah, he does. He has to. That's
this is the
good.
Argument I and my and a friend of mine have had for about 30 years now.
Oh, really?
So I want to tell you how grateful we are for what you have done for your son in order to get him to the point where he can do for himself. That's an amazing accomplishment.
Well,
and
I thank his therapist.
I'm sorry that you have to have additional obstacles in his coming up, but your perseverance sounds like it's paid off.
I like to think so. But
well, it's, if he's independent living, raising an income, and providing eat, sleep, and warm for himself, I'd say that's a positive thing.
Yes,
or it's at least potentially positive.
Oh yeah, it's a load off my mind. You know?
Yeah.
There was a problem you don't know.
We're talking on the show about an overall topic. We're doing an investigative series on the war on the poor. And we're talking this week and next week. We talked last week. So we're on a 3-week cycle talking about the battle for education. And you're a wonderful story of that. And I thank you for calling us today. Do you have any questions for me specifically?
No, I called in when you were covering for Alberto once, and you were talking about veteran stuff, which, you
yes.
know, that's another thing that I have issues with. But that's another day.
Well, I thank you for calling us today, Linda. It's been very nice talking to you, and I do remember the conversation we had about veterans. I hope you'll continue to listen. And
you're on during some of the football games, you know.
I know it. I've got to put the NFL in its place. And then there are all those local college games that you all are so fiercely loyal to, too.
Oh, not me.
So,
I don't follow. I follow the Patriots and Eagles.
The Patriots.
I follow the Patriots because I lived in New Hampshire for 19 years.
Yeah,
and
well,
Eagles,
I followed the Broncos because I lived in Denver for over 20 years.
Let's see, loyalties die hard.
That's right.
When I started listening to football, I was rooting for the Packers with Lombardi and Bart Starr and Horning and Ray Nitschke and those guys.
Yeah.
So that was before the Super Bowl. So I'm showing
well, I noticed that you had said at the outset that you were involved in the political world up there a little bit. I hope you'll call us next week because it's going to be a purely political show next week. And we'll talk about political forces at play and what we can do about it.
Okay.
I thank you for being a good test case for us because it automatically flows to what we're talking about, and I thank you for that. So continue listening. I'll keep your mic warm, and if there's anything else you'd like to add to the discussion, just press 1, and we'll get you back on the air, okay? All right. In just a few minutes, we're going to dig deeper into this and find out where the stuff ain't so great. You've had, through our visit with our friend Linda, a very, very good text case of why it matters. And We want you to understand that you can always give us a call, too, at 646-929-2495. You can talk with a Tennessee Progressive. This is Progressive Politics Tennessee Style, and we'll be back right after a break. See you in a bit.
Hello, everyone. This is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. There are many arguments proclaiming the evils of big government, and it always seems to come back to the same arguments made by the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists during the days of our founders concerning the differences between a strong central government and a weak central government. The Second Continental College adopted the Articles of Confederation on November 15, 1777, and it was in place until 1789. But it was replaced by the Constitution, which advocated for a stronger central government. Why was it replaced? The Articles of Confederation maintained the principle that the national government would not hold more power than the states, that which they saw as sovereign. This satisfied the fears that many of the states had regarding a strong central power, as Britain was before the Declaration of Independence. In fact, there was no executive branch, because they feared giving one man that much power, and it was decided that the Congress would handle all the nation's affairs. However, there were many inherent weaknesses with the Articles of Confederation. The national government did not have the power to tax. Congress did not have the power to force states to obey its laws. Congress could not enforce laws. Each state could issue its own paper money. Any state could put tariffs on trade between other states or countries. There was no system of national courts. Congress could declare war and raise an army, but it could not force the states to give men or money. After the Revolutionary War, the country went into a deep post-war depression. The states were threatening war with each other, and there were armed uprisings and riots across the land. Things eventually got so bad that the country was on the verge of a civil war. This was called the critical period. Because each state was printing their own money, the value depreciated soon after the war, and many returning soldiers were paid in currency they considered to be worthless. There are stories that some soldiers wallpapered their house with the paper currency. On May 25, 1787, the Continental Congress convened in Philadelphia to decide the fate of the Articles of Confederation, and on September 17, 1787, a new constitution was approved, which had the much-needed, stronger central powers. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA Blog Talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
Hello everyone, this is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. The Boston Tea Party is one of the most cherished stories from the founding of our country. This is one of the events that inspired the American colonists to stand up against tyranny imposed on them from the British government. Until 1764, the colonies were allowed self-rule, but with the conclusion of the French and Indian War in 1763, the British were low on money, so they decided to begin enforcing their trade laws to try to increase their capital. The British began to go after smuggling by searching colonial ships and convicting colonists in the British Admiralty courts. This enraged the colonists because the violators weren't given a trial by jury. Also, the British began levying taxes against the colonists on a whole host of articles, as well as tea, from sugar, coffee, stamps, and even dice and playing cards. The British didn't think they were being harsh on the American colonists, but the Americans disagreed. They believed the troops garrisoned in the colonies weren't needed since the French threat had been removed. Why would they want to pay taxes for garrisons that were only there to make sure the American colonists stayed in line? The colonists always received permission in the past from England for levying their own taxes, but now that right was being taken away, and because they didn't have their own representation in the British Parliament, they were being denied their own traditional rights as English subjects. This was going too far. In regards to the Tea Act, the British government gave the East India Company permission to transport tea, duty-free, from Great Britain to America to sell. Because they didn't have to pay the duty, it meant they could undersell the American merchants who sold tea, which would monopolize the tea trade. This would drive many colonists out of work. The Bostonians felt that something had to be done. If they allowed the tea to land and be offloaded, then the British would have had a moral victory in that the colonists were finally paying the tax they created for them. Also, there were many Tories, those still loyal to England, which would have had no problem with buying the tea. Destroying the tea seemed to be their only option. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA blog talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone. Hello, everyone. This is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. It is a time for the muckrakers to return. In the early 20th century, writers, photographers, and journalists stepped up to expose the injustices of their day. Back then, anything could be done to make a profit at the expense of the workers and the consumers. Among some of the practices were farmers being charged unfair rates by the railroad industry to move their produce, packing industries that didn't concern themselves with health and safety issues, and deplorable working conditions were being placed upon the workers at many factories, including the children that were also working as laborers. At the same time, there were many local, state, and federal elected leaders that were profiting by allying themselves with these industries at the expense of the public. Theodore Roosevelt used the term muckraker when he delivered his The Man with the Muckrake speech on April 15, 1906 in Washington, D.C. He stated, "In Pilgrim's Progress, The Man with the Muckrake is set forth as an example of him whose vision is fixed on carnal instead of spiritual things. Yet he also typifies the man who in this life consistently refuses to see the aught that is lofty and fixes his eyes with solemn intentness on that which is vile and debasing. Now it is very necessary that we should not flinch from seeing what is vile and debasing. There is filth on the floor, and it must be scraped up with a muckrake. And there are times and places where this service is the most needed of all the services that can be performed. Today, a muckraker has become known as someone that searches out and publicly exposes real or apparent misconduct of a prominent individual or business. But this kind of reporting has been playing second fiddle to the sensational 24/7 style of reporting being employed by the cable networks today. Tactics that strive to get the most profit at the expense of everyone else hasn't disappeared. And with today's social media and the ability of everyone to be citizen journalists, the need for the muckraker to expose these practices is more important than ever, so they can be held in check once and for all." Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA blog talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Progressive Politics Tennessee Style Internet radio show on Coffee Party USA Radio Network. Coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, I am the Tennessee Progressive, inviting you to join in the conversation at by calling area code 646-929-2495. You can also join us in our lively chat room, which you'll find at the bottom of today's episode, and share with us your comment or question, and we'll respond on the air. Education. The war on the poor, the battle for education. Welcome to the home of Johnny. Johnny Smith. Johnny Smith is a 12-year-old young man who is in middle school, having just moved to Anytown, and he's with his parents, his mom and his dad, and they have looked into the possibility of several schools for Johnny to participate in. There are two middle schools that he could participate in. One of those schools he's zoned into, which means that would be the school he would normally attend. A school bus would pick him up every morning and take him to there. He also has a middle school he could attend, but because of where he lives at 123 Easy Street, it's considered to be out of district for him, and he would have to get permission from the school board to attend there, and his parents would have to pay a fee for him to go there. He also has a possibility of attending All Saints School, which is a Catholic parochial school, a private school, that is certified to teach everything from pre-kindergarten through high school. And we're looking at Johnny's educational possibilities as an endpoint, but the beginning point is the federal government of the United States. As you may well imagine, there are issues all up and down this line, from the Federal Department of the Treasury to the Department of Education to the State Department of Higher Education and the State Department of Public Education and the Anytown School District, the Independent School District, and the Unified School District, because he lives in one and is next door to another. There's also the opportunity of private education through the Catholic School at All Saints. So his parents are having to look with some diligence. They've been around the neighborhood, and, you know, they've lived there about a month, and they've gotten to know their neighbors a little bit. Both Johnny's parents work, and they have had the pleasure of making a couple of friends, and they've been talking about which school they should enroll Johnny in, or which one their children belong to, or what they would recommend. And they visited each of the schools, all three of them. All three of the schools are within their possibility financially. So they've come down now to the point where they're actually looking at the educational standards and outcomes that each school enjoys. They've contacted the school district and the State Board of Education and found the report cards on the schools are virtually equal. Anytime Anytown Middle School has some extracurricular activities that are different from Heroes Middle School, but they are basically schools that have both in-classroom training and extracurricular activities available. And Johnny likes to play baseball. Anytime is in his district, but it doesn't have a baseball team. And Heroes Middle School is the one that is out of district but does have a rather successful baseball team. A lot of the baseball team players are solicited for the high school. So when Johnny goes to any town high, he can participate in the high school team there if he chooses. While there are two middle schools in any town, there's only one high school. So, of course, one public high school. There's All Saints, which teaches high school grades as well. And his parents, being conscientious and reasonably well-educated, find that education for Johnny is important, and he's also an excellent student. And this is one of the problems, because Hero has a baseball team, but their academic report card is just a little bit lower than the academic report card provided by the district and the State Board of Education when it comes to any town middle school. Johnny's parents are conscientious to the point that they're aware of these things because they've made it their business to find out. They've contacted the local parent-teacher organization for both schools. They've gone to the Catholic schools and talked to the educators and administrators there and talked to some of the parents. But they're not Catholic. They go to Anytown Presbyterian Church. That alone is not a necessary eliminator for the Catholic schools, because non-Catholics can go there so long as they can afford the tuition and agree to certain things. Any town, it like Heroes Middle School, also has dress code. And they have virtually the same classroom time, number of periods per day, number of weeks per year. And the kids that belong to those schools at the high school level are both relatively successful in their search for summer and casual employment. But it seems that Anytime is an older school. It was built in the 50s. And Heroes is a new school. It was built in the 90s. The overall budgets are roughly equivalent, but Heroes has a little bit more money spent on it per year because it has less maintenance cost. It can go more into the classroom activities. Does any of this have anything to do with the battle on education? Of course it does. Do we consider these things as a part of the battle for education? Not really. Not usually. We tend not to look at the student in this. If we give it an honest appraisal, looking at the student can tell us a lot. The argument tends to start with the Department of Education and work its way downhill. So that by the time it comes down to any town, there's this huge ball of government and state money and government money and the rules that you have to follow to get to the state money and the federal money and all that. And it impacts the local economy because, of course, the teachers and the administrators receive payment. They're citizens who work, and they pay taxes, and their tax dollars go to help fund the school as well. So the question is, if you want to pay a little bit more in your tax dollars because of the budget differences at Heroes as opposed to any town middle school. Another interesting thing in our scenario is that the educators, the faculty of any time, is not the same as the faculty at Heroes. Although both faculties are members of the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association. The state has received the current year, next year, budget allotment from the federal government, and they are preparing to create the distribution of those funds throughout the state, one of which will be the Anytime School District. And Anytown really likes their schools. They believe their kids, it's a suburban type town. There's not really, you know, too much low income, but the average income is not, is lower than the national average, put it that way. There are a fewer number of people above the average income, but the amount that they bring in income wise and revenue is enough to support the upper half of the median, where the lower half of the median is provided by a much larger number of citizens paying taxes. So what we're looking at first is how the money flows into this plot of slab of concrete that is being identified as a school system. And we've already seen that there are several impacts at several levels, because you really don't know, what the actual numbers of any town's distribution are. So when you're plugging it into our little scenario, all you have to do is a dollar sign, okay? And understand that dollars come into the Anytime school district from several sources, okay? They come in from the federal government. They come in from the state government. They come in from the local government via property taxation and mill levies. And they come in to the private education, to the Catholic school, from the parents. And now let's talk about the outcomes. If we're going to pay, what is it we're paying for? And there's some stark differences here. Okay. For instance, the Catholic School of All Saints has religious instruction. Anytime and Heroes do not. The money that is paid that supports the All Saints School is, for the larger part, not entirely, but for the larger part, private payments via tuition and other charges to the parents. The parents pay for this education. Let's just put it that way. And their dollars are earned exactly the same way as the parents who have children in any time and Heroes. But the amount of money that the middle school parents pay is significantly less than the amount of money that the All Saints students parents pay. And it is a significant amount of money. Okay. If you want to know how significant it is, what you would need to know is the amount of dollars per year that, between federal and state dollars, goes into the Anytown school district. And then you divide that by the number of students in each school from the total. Let's see, find the total for Anytown Middle School and the total for Heroes Middle School that comes in from the government, state and federal, or local. Put in a big wad, and then you divide that by the number of students in each of those schools to find out how much money has been allocated for the teaching of that student for a year. Then you divide that by the number of school days, and then you find out how much the State Department of Education allots from all its funds to each student at each school each year. You do the same thing with Catholic school, but it's reversed. You figure out how much money each parent pays, and there is usually a fee, a tuition charge, that the school has figured out it must have in order to provide the level of education that it presents to its students. how much of that is paid by the church, how much is paid by the state or the federal government, and how much is paid by the parents in tuition fees. Let's presume that there is, in each case, expectation of budget growth of 0.8% per year. Okay? 0.8% per year in revenue growth after all costs have been paid. The argument begins really simply at the top. Because the Department of Education has to do this over 50 states. And when they allot their money, they do it exactly the same way. How many students are in the public education system in the state? How much does each school district require in order to operate? And they look at it in time and all saints and heroes, and they determine that their percentage of the total going to the Anytown School District will be, say, 40% to Anytime, 50% to Heroes, and 10% to All Saints for 100% of the federal dollars that are going into the Anytown School District. That's how they arrived at the total number. Okay? All right, now these monies are dispersed by the federal government from the Department of Education, who is authorized via budgetary process in the United States Congress, who appropriates the money, which is a percentage of the total tax revenues that the federal government receives in order to pay for education. And then they break it out within the Department of Education down to the school district or to the state, depending on the state, by the way. And in this case, 100% of the allotment that was going to any town arrived at the state along with other money for all the other school districts. The State Department then did exactly the same thing. They took a basic amount of money, a wad, a pot. All the money of the federal government was going to pay to the state, came to the state. Now, the state does the process over again. And they get a shot at budgeting. And they say, well, we think... And then they start dividing up the money amongst the various and sundry school districts they have. And technically, the impression is that if there is a more affluent school population who has a higher percentage of professional working parents, they would ostensibly get less money of the total. And those school districts who had more blue-collar or unemployed or poor would get a greater percentage. And in point of fact, it doesn't work that way, but that's what ostensibly we think should happen. It's not because the affluent population schools deserve less money. Okay? It's that they tend to provide more of their income in property taxes because they pay more for their homes. They're more, I don't know, able to do so. So ostensibly or theoretically, the lower population strategically or economically or by whatever standard they choose, the mix, the lower income schools would receive a larger percentage of the allotment to any town school district. Unless, of course, you know, Uncle Fred's on the state school board, and he's got two kids in Heroes Middle School. So he's going to advocate probably for them over any town, or at least a higher percentage. And all of a sudden, humans are drastically involved here. For the government, it's relatively simple. They take from the total pot and distribute it to 50 states and territories. Okay. And then the states, where we currently exist in our explanation, divvy it up according to their parameters. And in this case, what happened was they decided that for the coming school year, Heroes would get 50% of any town's allotment of middle school money. Any town would receive 40% of any town's money, and All Saints would receive 10% for the total of 100% of the money. And because last year's included a 0.8% revenue growth, they returned 4% or 0.4% of that back into the money, so they got a little bit more all the way around. It became a slightly bigger pot. But, wait a minute. The school board universally gave both Anytown and Heroes faculties a 2% raise. It was part of their teacher's contract. So they had to come up with an additional 2% for the increase. It was a change of increase of 2%. So what they did was they used the 0.8% to go toward that, which meant that they had to pay an additional 1.2% of the faculty salaries out of the budget. So they did that. And that was a requirement because the school union, the teachers union, they had negotiated a contract with any town school district that said, in the coming year, we want a 2% pay raise. It doesn't have anything to do with how they came to that negotiated collective bargain or anything else. That's the outcome. Okay, they didn't lose anything. They just got a 2% pay increase, which for the average teacher in any town, say, the average salary for a middle school teacher in any town is $55,000. So the average increase in pay is $1,100 a year. About $100 a month. Okay. And that helps defray the cost of the expansion of the increase, you know, inflation and price rises and things like that, groceries and fuel and all that stuff. Cost of living allowance, if you will. Catholic schools at All Saints didn't get that raise. They got the net increase of the 0.8%, but that went into the school. That didn't go to the faculty, because All Saints faculty is not union. So, it's also a rough representation of the distribution of students within the town, too, that 50-40-10. And then the state says, we're going to give this amount of money that has been requested by the Anytown School District. We're going to give them, say, 85, 90, 60, any number you choose of their request. You need to know that universally the following things apply. Whenever you're talking about money going from the federal government down to the student's seat, on average, the usual scenario is that each successive year will have a net benefit to the seat of the student that is less than the previous year. Okay? Because taxes don't rise all that much in any town, and it's got a stable tax base, and you can pretty much depend that if you're going to pay a property tax of, say, 39 mils, which is 39 cents per $1,000, then it's going to be 39%. It's got to be for the 4-year term of the mayor and the city council and the board and all that. But the net result is that for each seat in any town school district, the net amount of money going to pay for that seat and to fund that seat for that year decreases by some small percentage every year and has since 1982. Okay? Wherever any town is, that's true. All right. So, do we maintain? Do we grow the expectations of educational delivery to the student, or do we reduce the educational delivery expectations to the student? Well, how is that tied to the amount of money? Well, because nothing is free. And if you want to have a quality education, you have to pay for it. Somebody pays for it every time. And in each of these instances, to a very real degree, the parents of every student has some input into the payment of the education their child is about to receive, which is the truth in this scenario, no matter where any town is. If it's your town, it's true for you too. And there are districts that are more income secure than other districts. When the state sends any town their WAD, the district then gets to do what the state and the federal government have done. They again take the total and split it out as their system requires or permits. For the purposes of explanation during this show today, I'm giving you some assumptions that you may find are not within parameters where you live. But understand that in every single case, these considerations are made, okay? I know this is a little hard to follow, but I hope you got a piece of paper out and you're following along. As a result of the money that comes into the Anytown School District, based upon the scheduled benefit budget that the school district has established when it asked the state and the Fed and the taxpayers for the money to operate the next school year, they did that based upon a budget that they created as a school board that says, in order for us to do what we believe is important for the educating of your child in the coming school year, the school board is going to need a minimum of X number of dollars. And the challenge for the school board then is to find that money. Now, they've gone through the process of saying, we know how much our taxes are going to pay, we know how much the state's going to pay, we know how much the Fed's going to pay. And we have three injection points that we can manipulate. We can manipulate the state budget by successfully negotiating more money out of the budget from the state. We can have an injection point at the federal level where we can negotiate more money for the state by the feds. We can have an injection point at the local level through mill levy increases, property assessment taxes, and incidental fees and charges. And what goes beyond that is serendipity, luck. We'll have a bake sale. That's how education becomes possible where you live. Whether it be private education or public education, it always happens the same way. The funding source may change a little bit or change by a percentage, but that is how it happens. Okay? So you have any town school district here with their pot of money. That is some percentage from 0 to 1,000 of what it was they requested from the state or from the state, okay, because we're talking about a district here. And they're going to establish that among all their sources. Now, they could have county money. They could be a county school system, which operates just a little bit differently as far as its funding, but basically the same, not enough to make a difference at the point of this discussion, okay? All right, so that's how the money happens. And you need to understand that no education occurs if this money system doesn't happen. In fact, you may discover that your local school board is saying that unless certain things happen, one of the two middle schools will be closed. And, you know, they've got reasons for saying that. What it usually comes down to is we have 1,500 seats in both middle schools. We can have 1,500 students per year that we budget and pay for, okay? We're only filling 1,100 of those seats right now because of population change. It may be up or down from last year. So we've got 400 seats we have to deal with. And that can be tough. You also have to deal with the subjects that are taught. You have to provide the faculty and administration support services and maintenance staff for the schools themselves, because physical plan is an important part of the budget, as well as faculty, administrative staff. Salaries. One of the ways of comparing this is to your family budget. It's not accurate, but it's representative. You got so much gazintas and you got to have so much gazautas, okay? And it is a fact that for every year since 1982, the average school district's yearly budget has gone down by some percentage. Can we afford to keep both middle schools open? The two middle schools together are taking 90% of the educational resources for that level, middle school level, which doesn't affect the high school, the colleges, or, you know, anything like that. We're looking at the middle school budget here. And 10% to All Saints Catholic. So is it time for us to talk about consolidating these schools? It may or may not be, because then you got to look at additional bus schedules, additional teaching time, additional units, additional seats in the schoolroom, increased class sizes, teacher overload, and it may be a better plan to keep them both open with a lowered number of seats. Okay? Let's just presume nominality here for the purposes of our discussion and say that as many seats as there are available, every seat is filled. Okay? Then we have to talk about what it is that we are required to teach, what it is we want to teach, what it is we feel is a need to teach, and we start planning our curriculum. Curriculums require usually textbooks. Textbooks have to be purchased. That's another cost that goes into it. Textbooks have a painfully slow process of adoption, and let's say that 75% of the textbooks are 2 years old or less, 25 or more than 2 years old. All right, so we got that to deal with. All the extracurricular activities, which are non-education essential, they could be football team, basketball team, baseball team. In fact, we learned earlier that Heroes has a baseball team, but Anytown Middle does not. Regardless of what we intend, these are all considerations that go into the decision to have a school system in the Anytown School District. All right. I think we've established sufficient groundwork for every possible consideration of discussion about public education versus private education in America. Now, that does not mean that we have included every possible consideration. What it means is that we have given you a very basic background as to some of the things that go into the determination of what happens to your child during their day at school. The discussion begins with the two sides. The first side says, we believe in public education, and we believe that public education is so important to our society as a whole, and certainly the community where we live, that we support it and provide it. We believe that the model by which we do that public education is sufficient for our purposes, and we know this because our achievement scores, our outcomes, our standardized testing show that on average, our students at the middle school level for any town USA are at or above the national standard. And within a majority percentage of our expected standard. Okay? Of course, three towns over in a different county, it may not be that way at all. It may be that the average achievement score is significantly lower. In fact, could be failing. Could be that the county, three counties over, can only afford a certain number of dollars per school year per teacher. And as it turns out, that particular school does not have any unions. The other side says that we don't believe that public education is meeting the needs of our students, and that we will be better off to investigate and instigate alternative education in a private or charter school or magnet school or homeschool situation because our public schools have failed us. It's not that they are failing us. It's not that we believe they are recoverable. It's we believe that they are extinct models, and we can't do that anymore. We've got to come up with a brand new part of education. Is that legitimate? Well, depends on who you talk to. But I will tell you that there are nefarious players on both sides of this issue. There are camps who have vested interests on both sides of this issue, and they are playing each other very well. One of the things you have to understand is that the federal government to pay no matter what. So you need to understand that the federal government, because of its requirement under congressional legislation, Federal Education Acts, under U.S. Code, say that we will be funding education. There are those that say that should not happen. It's not the business of the federal government to run any town USA's school district. On the other side, there are those who say the people and the parents of any town should have the last word on how their school districts look, what they teach, who they hire, and all that, because after all, we know more about the needs of our local population than the federal government or even state government or even the Anytown School Board. And we have an alternative that we believe will work, and it's called charter school or a magnet school or a home school or some other non-publicly funded form of education. And there are political powers, political parties, political forces in play that align themselves with either one or both of these issues. They want a cafeteria plan where they could take it or leave it. There have been parent organizations who have actually closed schools because of recent changes in the school stratus policies at the State Board of Education level in favor of other alternative school systems. And we see this in many places across the United States, from California to Detroit to Florida to Texas to New York. And there are those who very much want this to continue across the land. Equally so, as we saw in Chicago, there is a strong affiliation with public schools in the Chicagoland area, and their teachers walked out on strike for over a week because of these very self-same things we were talking about. They listed a series of items that had nothing to do with them as employees, but everything to do with their kids as students, of student learners. So, here's where the conversation really gets fun, or disgusting, depending on your point of view. Remember, I said very little of this conversation has anything at all to do with students. Okay? Now, the reality behind that is where the conversation is about students is in the money. The school boards allocate their budgets by the number of students that are sitting in seats in their public schools. Charter schools are for-profit corporations. They're business enterprises. And they are paid by the fees which are collected in order for a student to attend their school, whether it be by voucher system, where the money that the federal government would pay to put a child in a seat in a public school then goes into the form of a voucher, and that can be purchased, or that education can be purchased wherever the parent wants to. And the difference, of course, the parent makes up. Instead of the school board funding the budget, the parent does. And they do that by selection of the school the child attends, whether it be any town high, any town middle school, Heroes, or All Saints. The voucher is a warrant. It's not a check. It's a warrant. It says, upon demand or upon presentation, pay this amount to holder. So hopefully I've given you enough of a background that in our fictional town of any town, we can see that within the walls and under the roof of these schools, there's some pretty powerful conversation going on, and through the front doors of those schools come an awful lot of advocates for each side. Parents, teachers, unions, private charter organizations, who, by the way, have to be sponsored by, as it turns out, a public school in order to get a charter approved. What they do is they take the money from the public school that sponsors them and takes that money and funds their own operation over to charter school or the magnet school or the home school, all in varying amounts under different scenarios. Now, we're going to have some rather astounding statistics and information in our next show that talks about how we measure the success of these choices and what you can do about it. But I will tell you that while, say, as an overall average across all public school institutions in every district, in every county, in every state in the union, the average success rate is about 50%, which means that one out of every two students that begin middle school at any town will complete middle school at any town. about the same percentage is true at the high school level. Just one out of two students that begin high school at any town will graduate high school at any town. When you go from high school to college, the average nationally is perceptibly different. 38% of those completing high school in America will go to college for at least 1 year. And of those, for every student that matriculates, that enters college in a public college institution, okay, for every student that enters, only 1 in 10 will graduate in 4 or 5 years. If you're looking at the private side or the for-profit charter school side, we now have a reasonable amount of data which shows that the national average of charter school success, that being the same success model definition as we have for public education, the average failure rate, 86%. This says 2012. Which means that of every 100 students that go into charter schools, for-profit, private, magnet, homeschools, more than 8 out of 10 will fail. And this is the new idea that a lot of people are pushing. There are a lot of reasons they're pushing it. And some of the reasons they're pushing it are kind of creepy. The same people who are fighting to close our public schools are the same people who are fighting to open for-profit charter schools for the greatest part. The argument is, should we close, deny, end, make extinct public education in America and trade out for a new, upgraded, better model? We have new technology, we have new systems, we have new ideas, the things we thought we now know. We have situations where textbooks are outdated by the time they get to the schools. We have facts that are no longer facts. When a student enters school and learns something as a freshman in high school, for instance, more than 50% of the time, the fact they learn as a freshman is no longer true when they are a junior. That's what innovation, creativity, and technology have provided to us, and there are some realistic things like virtual schools, online adjuncts to colleges, high schools, and middle schools, and grade schools. That can be a part of this conversation. There are those who think that one of the most powerful reasons to have a charter school, even a for-profit charter school, is that you don't have to have unions. You don't have to have public service employee unions or teacher unions or anything else, and you can make more profit. And if you can get a teacher to work for minimum wage, and by the way, there are companies out here who are solely responsible for hiring teachers who pay them nothing more than minimum wage, that will be more profit for the school, and yay us. And to hell with the outcomes. We'll try, but as long as we make profit, our outcomes don't matter. And parents can take their kids out of a private school and move them into a charter school. They can even close a school and open a charter school. But if the charter school fails in the terms of the education board in its student achievement, in terms of the charter school board, in terms of profit, you can't just go and open up the school you closed. Okay? That's a whole nother issue. As we look at these issues, you need to understand that there are players involved. There are outcome expectations that are not received or not achieved, and that this is destroying, in a very real sense, a significant portion of the middle class of America. It is furthering the distance between the gotstas, habstas, and the needs to wantstas. Or, as my friend says, the filthies and the Ubers. Some would say the 1%, the 99%. because not everybody in the 1% goes to 100% private school. A lot of them are homeschooled. Some of them go to magnet schools, charter schools, public schools. And the question is, in the end analysis, what is the value of the product? Are we creating citizens who can actively participate in the ongoing democracy of the United States of America? Can we hire workers that are capable to do the jobs that we need them to do? Can they be a positive contributing force to our society as a whole, much less create the generation of those who will take us to the next level? And why is this important? Every school that you see, every student that you know, is the potential of America. There is not one student in one school today who is unimportant, who deserves anything better than the very best available to them. Some say we should have free education through high school or technical school for all students. Okay. So you got to pay. You got to pay the teachers. You got to pay the admin. You got to pay the maintenance. You got to pay the physical plant. You got to pay the charges. No, we're going to throw it all in 100%, and we're going to free educate everybody up through college. Question, would that be cheaper than what we're doing now across all systems? And let's say we're just going to limit it to the public education venue, okay? In public education is going to provide free quality education for every student in America through college, four-year degree program. Is that cheaper than providing public education as we currently do? Or would it be cheaper for us to pay as citizens private or public charter schools to do the same thing? It's a hotly contested debate because there are people who want to remove public education from the American landscape, they say. And come to find out, there's some ulterior motives behind their actions that they don't even tell you about. And we'll talk about that next week, too, because we'll identify who they are. We'll tell you what their motives are, and we'll tell you why their motives are what they are, and we'll tell you what you can do about it. What you can do about it this week is to look around you. Talk to a student. Find out what's going on at their school. What are they learning? And why does it matter? Because that person you're looking at is a future that you won't be around to enjoy. And three generations down the road, they are the reflection of what America will be. They will be our leaders, our politicians, our teachers, our moms, our dads, our mill workers, our lawyers, our doctors, our cops, our nurses, our working America or our non-working America. They will be those who must live in poverty or those who will be privileged to live in affluence. Get a sense of what education is doing where you live. That's your assignment this week. That's what you can do about it. I don't care what your particular argument is, because you're going to come to the facts from your own perspective. The only thing you're not allowed to have is your own facts. Facts have to serve both sides. And if you'll do that, you'll come to understand, perhaps in ways you didn't before, this whole notion of what is called the battle for education and the war on the poor. It's a battlefield where battles are raging right now. And there's something you can do about it. But the one thing you must do about it first is stop ignoring the battle that is happening around you. Because it is. coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River. For the last 2 hours, I have been the Tennessee Progressive. Go out there and make a difference this week, okay? We'll see you next time. Bye-bye for now.